Welcome to Games We Grew Up With, a podcast that relies on nostalgia and a geeky sensibility. Each episode, we'll talk about one of the video games that left an impression on us as kids, put on some rose-tinted glasses and reminisce about it, then replay the game and see how it's held up over the years. This episode, we're hitching up our wagons and talking about the Oregon Trail for PC. I'm Chris.
And I'm Katie.
We're about to ford the river, and little Sally is dying of dysentery, so let's talk some games.
Let's go. So, this might be the oldest game we've covered?
Covered, yes, definitely.
Because, I don't think we've covered anything older at this point in time. So that's exciting. Going super old school here. And literally school.
Nah.
See what I did there?
Yeah, this is definitely one of the first games we've ever played outside of maybe the
Pong?
Atari, but I don't know if
I
they dragged
Pong
out
the
Atari.
Atari.
Yeah. So this is fun.
I don't know when, because we didn't play it till much later, so I don't know if we might have been playing Super Mario at Grandma's by now. Anyway, that's not the point of what we're supposed to be getting into right now. We're excited. This is on to episode 53, so everything is going well. We're actually slightly on track this year, so appreciate everyone sticking around with us.
Yay!
All that to be said, I think, I don't even know. I don't have a good segue for this. Do we have a good segue?
We don't have a segue, so we should do something random, which means it's time to talk about the trope of the day!
And it's random! So, Chris, what is today's video game trope of the day?
Today's trope of the day is RNG. You could take that as random number generator or random number god, a.k.a. RNGesus, a.k.a. I hate it.
Chris, tell me, what is RNG and then how does it apply to video games?
So, RNG, random number generation, plays a huge role in video games, especially early video games. So, mm-hmm. If you want something to happen by chance in a game, you need a random number. Sometimes these numbers are truly random. Sometimes they're weighted. If you want to, if something happens more often than not, then you could do it that way. This is not a trivial thing. It's something that goes kind of deep into statistics and computer science stuff. And I think now you kind of very much take it for granted because there's so many programs that could do that for you. But This has been around in games forever. The second part of that, the random number god, is when people decry random numbers.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you're just unlucky. Much like I hear one of the producers in this podcast is a champ of rolling natural ones. So.
That is very true. And so typically when people complain about the random number god, it's bad. And then RNGesus is when you're so incredibly lucky that it's all working out for you because RNGesus is looking out for you. So those are the two ends of that spectrum of the god. The god is a cruel god versus RNGesus apparently is the savior. definitely some random Christian overtones in there, but yeah, it's fine.
You got to shout at someone at the sky. So,
yeah. And there is a lot of shouting.
Yeah. And obviously there the parallels is, rolling a die. So that's way easier to do to roll a die. But strictly in the video game sense, you see this everywhere and don't even think about it per se. Again, Oregon Trail, random numbers all over the place. Random events.
Yeah. It's how they built the game was on a random number generator.
And so many of those early games were kind of built that way because it was just easier to do something, random rather than something deterministic, which is, it kills the replay value and stuff like that. And it's still used today. It's still used today in, friggin' gotcha games.
Yeah.
Loot boxes are random number generated
a lot of times. I think one of the other examples I put in there was in Final Fantasy VI, there's a character named Gao who has a rage technique, then you have to learn them. And one of his most popular that's used by like every player is Scratch that you get from Stray Cat. And there's a couple of steps to make it happen, but once you get to the point where you need to find him in the veldt to then learn the skill, it's a RNG of whether you find the Stray Cat or not. And we were watching a friend of the podcast stream this game, and he streamed, I think, about 3 hours and could not find the Stray Cat. And it was brutal. And while that happened, someone else on the in the chat was like, oh, lol, my son just started doing this and found it in 20 minutes. And it's just, it is just pure luck.
It took me 5 hours, something like that.
Yeah.
It was a long time to find that damn cat.
It is a particularly brutal RNG for that one. A game that we've been playing, if you watch us on stream, GWGW show over on Twitch, Borderlands has, their loot is all randomized, so there's a good part of RNG on what loot you're going to be getting out of the boxes, the style of loot, how powerful it is. There's some limitations on it. I think they have certain like levels in certain boxes, like these are all green weapons, these are all blue weapons kind of thing. But beyond that...
And even the stats themselves, like the weapons are built out of 3 or 4 parts being random. And you see this in Diablo 2. It was a huge thing with that. Diablo 3 actually had to sort of non-randomize some of their random loot because it was just becoming so frustrating that it was frustrating to play. It was almost unplayable because you were just never getting anything that you actually needed. Like, you would get items from a different class. You would get all that stuff. I think Destiny ran into that problem.
Destiny did as well.
No, sorry. Not Diablo 2. Diablo 3 had that problem. Diablo 2 was there a little bit better, but...
I was going to say, for Borderlands 2, Borderlands as well, I guess it is also Borderlands 2, I wanted to bring up the DLC of Tiny Tina's Assault on Dragonkeep, which is a D&D play DLC, and they literally have a die roll chest that you can run into that will roll a die for you that's RNG, because they lean in, because that's very Borderlands humor to lean in even further.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Kyle's taking over for a second.
Please.
Listening here, I just want to call out that, you know, naming a number of specific times when like random numbers come into play, I think it's important to establish random numbers are what drive every game in the world, basically always. It's loot from every monster, whether you get the sword, whether your hits miss or not, what enemies load sometimes, you know, everything about video games is driven by random number generators, which again you can't do. It doesn't actually exist, because if you think about it, it's a set of instructions that you're telling a computer to do, and you can't tell a computer just think up something random. So there's a lot of ways around it, but it drives everything. And you know, a card game, a die rolling game, everything is random in these games. So it is possibly the most impactful thing in the world of video games is random numbers.
Very well said.
But what about my skills? All my personal
counterpoint
skills.
Flight simulators. Ha ha! Deterministic physics. I literally have my textbook from my master's open to the random number generation page.
Yeah, that sounds right. So using that as the jump off point of real world examples of random number, because it's not just in computers. Random number generation is not something that is solely for computers. Chris's degree, as he just mentioned, has a section on it, because while that is applying to computers, it's not just for games, I should say, then.
Correct. Simulation is very much statistics and random numbers. As we've said, there's a handful of people on this podcast that deal with random number generation. Literally, at least 3 of the classes I took for my master's, like one of the first things that they went over was random number generation, which, you know, is, again, great when you use physics-based sims that don't have random numbers in them. But there's that. It's fine.
It's fine. But then there's other things like real world, like in pinball, it's notorious of having random number generation problems, and then a random number god, because certain power-ups in pinball games will be random number generated, and whether they work or not, and then at the end, whether you get an extra life is completely random number generated. So like that's come up in those games. Tabletop games, as we said, rolling ones, well, it's not actually like generated because it's rolling a die. That's a physical way of, I guess, a random number being generated.
It's the OG random number generation. Yeah.
what we base a lot of the video game versions on are the idea of a die or games of luck, basically. It also exists in nature. So, like, it's fascinating how in order to randomly generate numbers, as producer Kyle mentioned, it's not truly random when you're telling a computer program how to generate the number. So there's something correct, slightly deterministic about that. So there are ways now that they are trying to, that scientists have tried to truly random generate numbers. So, for example, there is a really well-known idea that the internet is secured by lava lamps. And this is a true fact, that there is a wall of lava lamps in the lobby of Cloudflare that they use, that basically there's a camera watching them and the movement of the lava will that's how they use their random generation for the security pins for their like cloud storage stuff.
That's fun.
It's truly a physical randomness that can never be hacked. It can't be guessed, like, cause you can't predict a lava lamp. So it's things like that. It's things like there are, isotopes. Hold on. I'm going to say
that's
this.
That's a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but they use radioactive isotopes and a Geiger counter and a numeric counter to stop counting when the Geiger goes beep. And they've used that as well to randomly generate numbers.
Huh.
So because the time between successive radioactive decays is random.
Yep.
So that's how they use that. So it's fascinating that they will bring in real life things to create random numbers to be truly more random than the computer generated random numbers. That's how important random number generation is to not just video games, but to so many things that we do.
Music director that we both know from high school talked about this one random, like, weird music project where it was a bunch of, I think he said it was a bunch of bassoon players that had these weird goggles with staff lines on them. And so they had an open bowl of popcorn. And when one would pop up and when they caught it with their eye, they would play that note.
Amazing.
It's like, that is the most music conservatory thing that I've ever heard.
Someone had a little bit of outside influence while working on that project, being like, wouldn't it be cool?
Ian Malcolm would be very proud.
It's random number. It's RNG is something that we've wanted to talk about on the podcast so many times, and we kept putting it off. And then we got to this game and we're like, it is literally as producer Kyle said, is the basis of many games. They also
so
add other
games.
Mechanics on top of that. Oregon right. Trail doesn't really add anything on top of it. It is pretty much the game. It's random number generation.
It's such a deep subject, too. It's one of those, like, we could probably keep talking about this. I'm not going into the technical details.
I was
going
to say, you could probably do, if you ever do another tech talk, RNG would be a great tech talk.
It would just be statistics.
I was gonna. You could put the three other members of the podcast discussing this.
Maybe.
While I just
maybe
sit. I could take producer Kyle's chair for once and just sit in the background.
So look forward to that. Maybe it might be. We'll set up a Monte Carlo and see if we do it or not.
So that's why RNG is today's video game trope of the day.
Trope of the day. Maybe.
Possibly.
Possibly.
Statistically likely.
All right, let's talk about the game of the episode. Katie, what can you tell me about the Oregon Trail for the PC, among other things?
So, the Oregon Trail game was originally created in 1971 by three student teachers using BASIC on a mini computer.
BASIC! Good God.
And
it's better than assembly language. So
yeah, so they were student teachers. They were just assigned a middle school. This was in Minnesota. And they created this game in about 10 days after school every day. They stayed at the school because, of course, they didn't have personal computers back then. So they stayed in the computer labs at school, created this game because one of them was a history teacher and wanted a fun way for the students to learn about the Oregon Trail. And they put it into use in the school for about a year while they were still student teachers there. Right. And then at the end of that, and it was super wildly popular. The students loved it. They thought it was so cool. Once they were done being student teachers, they deleted the game off the computers. And the only way they had a saved version is they printed the source code out and then just kept it, which is wild to think about.
Yeah. And this was made on a teletype machine.
Yes,
it was made to run
teletype.
On a teletype machine. Like, there was no, the output was a printed out sheet of paper.
Yep. It's to hunt, you actually had to type bang, and they based how quickly you typed it on how well you did.
Uh-huh.
Which is, because they were trying to teach the students how to type as well. It's so brilliant.
Yeah.
But beyond that, after that point, of course. So what's really interesting is the game could have been it. That was the end of the Oregon Trail. It would have been stayed in like two or three, I think, like Minnesota schools. And that would be it, be the end. But it was nothing but that printed off code until 1974, when one of the original creators, Don Rostich, probably said that wrong.
Yeah, sorry, Don.
Don Rostich. he was asked by the
Minnesota Educational Computing Consortium
to recreate the game because they had heard it was popular. They wanted to use it on a wider level in Minnesota at schools. So he went back and rebuilt the game off the code that he had printed off. As soon as they started doing that, it was wildly popular in all the Minnesota schools. More and more schools wanted it. More and more kids were playing it. So he ended up publishing the code in 1978 into a magazine, so it was available nationwide. Basically, he gave out the code for free. He did not
make an insane
amount of money about this, because he printed off the code and said, other schools should be allowed to do this, which is amazing.
What it kind of reminds me of is MUDs, like the original MUDs. Where it was just all open source, all text-based, and a buttload of random numbers.
Yep. Very much so. I mean, that's essentially what it was.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what it was. And it was redeveloped from there. I didn't want to track the, like, eight versions that it took to get from that very early pure text version to kind of what I think most modern kids played. I say modern. Well, kids of our generation played. I won't even say modern. We're not modern anymore.
That's the point of the podcast.
That's the whole point of the podcast. So kids of our generation played. The version we likely played, I think, was the really popular one at the time, was from 1992. And that's when it was released on DOS and Windows. Before that, it was mostly on Apple computers that they were using it, because that's what they had in the classrooms a lot of times, everything. So we played, I believe, the DOS or Windows version. That was the 1992 version of the game. By that point, they'd added graphics in. They'd added a lot more educational elements into it, talking about the landmarks they passed. So they did expand quite significantly from that original game that was much more straightforward.
And they kind of had, I think, at that point, two versions of it, like, because when they redid it, it was made for more home use, but then they still released an educational version where they gave, like, essentially a teacher's manual so the teacher could, like, talk through the stuff. Yeah,
which is brilliant. I love that. And I really appreciate as well that education was still a huge factor in this game, because every version they were putting out, they were trying to make it more and more accurate to the things they knew about the Oregon Trail. They were trying to say, here are actual events that happened. Here are actual places people stopped along the way. They tried to make it as accurate as possible. And in other ways, they tried to make it in more modern versions. So we'll talk about a little how many versions there are, but in the later 2000s, when versions were coming out, they started acknowledging that maybe colonization of the quote-unquote Wild West wasn't great for everybody, that the Native Americans saw it as a very negative light, and then were seen in the game as a very negative for a while. That was reduced down in the earlier days, but they did acknowledge, like, okay, we need to reassess how we put this out there now that we have more education, now we have more knowledge of how we're doing it. So it is still meant to be a educational game. Even if it's not a perfect game, it's still meant to be educational to a certain extent, which I think is a really important part and piece of this game.
One of the suggestions for Trope of the Day that I threw in at the last minute, and we didn't really have time to do it, but was edutainment games. So it's one of those, it's like you're trying to teach the students without them realizing that they're learning.
Yeah. Or even if they realize they're learning, they're excited to do so because the gamified elements make it exciting.
And there was an explosion of those games
in the 90s.
Right around that, like early and mid 90s. Like,
yeah,
I had so many.
Yeah. We definitely had some. I it's one of the games that I want us to place at some point on this podcast, if I can remember the name of it. There's a particular game I want us to play, but we'll dig into that later. So, I just kind of talking about how we're really bad on this podcast of saying the same things over and over again about like games that are really popular becoming part of the zeitgeist. And it's not true for every single game, but we do cover a lot of games that has happened for, because those are the games we played as kids.
I'm pretty sure we've never used the word zeitgeist on the podcast before.
It's a good word.
You're not wrong, but I think that might be a first. Ding ding.
So, it just talk about Oregon Trail again. Because I don't think it's played as often in schools as it was when we were kids. I don't know if it's as much a part of it for kids as it is for people of our generation. Of everyone I know played the Oregon Trail in some form or fashion as kids. Like, it was just something that we all had this common memory of playing that game in like the computer labs and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's so popular in that they've not only remade the game multiple times. In 2011, someone remade the basic code version so that it's available online to play. You can go and play the basic version from 1975, which mm-hmm. is hilarious. But they've remade it for cell phones. They made a board game version.
I was going to bring up the board game because we own that board game.
Yeah.
And it is just as hilarious as the original.
Yeah. You guys played it with our parents, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
And it is as of 2024, the Oregon Trail is now available on every modern console. So PS5, Xbox Series X, Switch, PC, Mac, they all have a modern version available as of 2024. That's wild to me.
Yeah.
And it
definitely has a place in so many people's hearts. Like,
yeah. Just kind of go over. So, like, it is such a massive game. Some critical response. This isn't a game that we're going to have, like, critics actually, like, rating the game. That's, like, not how these kind of games work. But just to say how popular it was, by 1995, the Minnesota Educational Computing Consortium, who, as Chris said, were the ones who published the game originally in 1974, they're the ones who kind of brought it to the mainstream in that way, reported it was making around $10 million a year from the game. In 1995. That's
amazing.
That's crazy. The game came out originally for them in 1974, and they were still making that much money. It's so crazy. As of 2011, they believe that about 65 million copies had been sold. And that doesn't even take into account all of the free versions of the game that are everywhere online. Like, it's mm-hmm. insane. It's wildly just such a core memory for so many people. And I was excited to play it again.
I definitely was. And it was a ton of fun. Spoilers.
Yeah, but the people who made it basically made no money off of it, which is also kind of wild.
Yeah, that just happens sometimes.
We were watching an interview with them, and they were like, yeah, that's fine. It's not why we made it. We didn't make this game to make money. We made this game to educate kids.
Yeah, and that's awesome.
That's props.
Again, going back to the Mud guys, like, they just made it, explicitly put it out on open source so everyone could enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but I think that is probably a good transition into what we actually remember about this game before we played it again. Mm-hmm. So why don't we play our Chiocarina of Time, go back to the past, and see what we remember and what our rose thoughts were.
Let's go. I hope I don't get dysentery. That music means we're back in the past, back before we had a chance to play this game again. So, Chris, tell me about the Oregon Trail.
I'm going to say, what's the first phrase that comes to your mind when you think of Oregon Trail? Because it's what everyone thinks of, right?
Like,
You've
died of dysentery and you have to ford the river.
Yeah.
Like, those are the two.
Fair enough.
Ford the river,
the dysentery.
Dysentery
one is the one that sticks out to me the most. But
every time.
Yeah. Yeah, this game. This is probably one of the first computer games.
One of the earliest, for sure.
One of the earliest, if not. Yeah. I mean, we played like other like Nintendo and stuff like that, but like computer games, this has to be up there with the first.
It's also not a game I ever played at home, obviously. Well, not obviously. I never played this game at home because I don't think we owned it. I only played this at school.
Yeah. Yeah, it was in a classroom or computer labs. Yeah, this was one of those first edutation games.
Edutation games.
I mean, not really, because it wasn't educational in any way, shape, or form.
You learned about how hard it was to go west and how you could die of dysentery.
Yeah.
I remember I was in the computer club in elementary school, and all that meant was we got like an extra half hour after school, like once a week, because you could take the late bus home, like if you got permission, and we would get longer time playing Oregon Trail, and then also we got to use the printer at school, which was those dot printers back in the day,
where
dot matrix printers, and I remember I printed my name. Katie in rainbow, which was like color. Wow. And then I like hung it on the wall, and that dot matrix was like on my wall for like years and years and years until we did the makeover in like middle school. I had that dot matrix on my wall.
Nice.
And yeah, so those were my memories of elementary school playing Oregon Trail, dying of dysentery, not wanting to hunt, but having to hunt because I didn't want to kill the squirrels because that's all I could shoot. Like,
that's like 90% of my memory was the hunting minigame. Because I remember there was actually two versions. There was like a second version of the game was like slightly better graphics.
I don't remember that.
Because hunting minigame sticks out as the big difference, because in the first one it was like Atari style, like, you know, moving
that's
around.
That's all I remember. That's the only way I remember.
I want to say the second one was almost like mouse aiming. I don't remember that at all. Bless you. whatever, Buck Hunter, that style stuff running by. I don't entirely remember that, so
I might have only played the earliest version.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a typing game. You had to type in what you wanted to do. I guess that's how it was kind of educational. It was teaching you to type and read.
Well, it was teaching you how to read, certainly.
It was a DOS game. But so you had to be like, what did you want to do next? Ford the river or continue this way? And you had to be like, I'm going to build a raft. I don't know if you had to type it out or if it was like a number. That I don't remember.
It wasn't like a MUD or anything like that.
No, but it wasn't a MUD. It was not nearly as like complex as a MUD.
No, but I remember...
Which
like,
stands for MUD is...
Multi-user dungeon.
It's not a MUD. Anyway, shape or form.
And that's what I'm... A lot of my memories, I'm trying to remember which version of the game it came from. Like, one of them, you could, like, essentially pick a class.
Yes.
Like, you picked, like, a job.
Yeah, so you could and it would give you different benefits at the beginning, whether you were a farmer, a merchant, or...
Yeah, like a carpenter or a cartwright. Is that the name of a wagon?
I want to say there was a banker where your one benefit was you just had more money.
Maybe. I always picked Hunter and like bought... I never brought any food. I just bought a ton of wagon parts and then immediately went hunting.
Even
if it's like you brought back 10,000 pounds of buffalo, but you could only carry 100. It's like, still hunting.
Yep, and that's you wonder why
the buffalo went extinct. They wiped out
buffalo. That's, I think, historically accurate. They did kill way more than they needed and would just leave the carcasses and just be like, meh. So, history lesson, folks. It was a very simple game. It was easy. Yeah. I don't know if I ever got to Oregon.
I think I beat it a handful of times.
Okay.
I remember most of the game is you're literally like, because could you speed it up? Like, you're just watching.
Yeah, you could speed it up.
You're just like watching oxen move and.
And then making choices at certain times of like,
something happens.
Yeah. Do you ford the river? Do you build a raft? Do you try to go around, which can take a lot longer? Do you die
of
dysentery?
And like, if you took the raft, you have to pay for it.
Well, you have to add the supplies for a raft. And then you couldn't always bring everything because it would, you only had so much weight that would fit on the raft, I think. And then sometimes the raft broke.
Right.
So.
And yeah, sometimes it would just be like, oh, somebody died. It was just like a random event. Be like,
it was
oh,
a random event.
What?
Oh, God. I think talking, we'll do a little bit of cultural impact here. I know we normally do this in the main episode, but I think for Rose, it was such a, I think everyone played a little bit as a kid. It was just that one game everyone talked about as kids. It stuck out with everyone's memory for a reason. There's, you know, the board game about it now. There are, you know, it's a meme almost at this point.
Oh,
the you've died of dysentery, like, is a meme more than anything else. So
yeah, it like, just,
it was a fun game. It was simple. It was really straightforward. It's probably going to be really stupid to play again.
Oh, it'll be a blast to stream, I'll tell you that. I remember you could name your party.
Yes, you right? could name your party.
So that was a fun thing to do.
So yeah, you'd have to name them. You're like, if I named them someone I like, I don't want them to die. So sometimes I would purposely name people for people I wasn't a fan of, because then if they died, I didn't feel bad. I didn't try to kill them actively. I just didn't feel bad if they were dead. It's a difference. Very distinct difference.
You just enjoyed when they died.
No, I just wasn't sad.
You monster.
Yes, very much so. I think this podcast has proven this fact. Right.
There's not a lot to remember about this game.
No, it's a very simple DOS game.
Yeah. I mean, DOS is just the operating system. It's not like...
I know, but what I'm saying is it wasn't even like a CD-ROM game that you booted up from DOS. Like, it was just like...
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it was on a floppy. So then what do you give your... What's your rose-tinted score for Oregon Trail then, Chris?
I mean, it's at 9.5 because it was so much fun as a kid, because it was like nothing I had ever played, and I just played it all the time. Like, as you said, I would stay after school and play it on the computers. Like, it was so much fun.
And it definitely was very isolated to just elementary school. I don't remember playing it beyond elementary school. I don't think it was a thing in middle school.
The newer version, if I played it in middle school, maybe. I think... Maybe the newer version. I think we'd moved on to SimAnt and SimCity. Yeah. And
we'd actually played computer games at that point.
Operation Neptune. Slightly going off the rails. That was the submarine one.
Oh, yeah.
What is your rose-tinted score for this game?
I'm going to give it a solid 8. I really liked it. I love playing it. I don't think I missed it when I stopped playing it.
That's fair. That's fair, because there was always something
bigger
new
and better
at that point, because that world was just exploding at the time.
Exactly.
So what's your predicted score going to be for this game?
Has to be a 6. It's not going to be a good game. It's just not. It's going to be super basic. I might, if there isn't a way to speed things up, I'm going to get really irritated really fast.
It'll
go
just be
faster.
One of those. If you're streaming it, it'll be like a let's chat while this game is just running in the background.
Pretty much. So
it's
we'll
like,
see.
It's like Truck Simulator.
What about you? What's your predicted score?
Probably like a 7. I think it's obviously it's going to be very, very simple.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's going to be flawed. It's just going to be very simple.
It's just too basic to be flawed.
Yeah.
I think,
it's
probably
written in like assembly language.
That'd be interesting to look into.
Oh, I shall.
So that's how we wrap things up. For Rose scores, I gave it an 8. You gave it a 9.5. But for our predicted scores, we predictably put it.
No, you were right.
No, I was right the first time. We predictably put it. Dang it.
You were doing so well.
I was so strong. For our predicted scores, we, not surprisingly, dropped it down. I left it at a 6 out of 10, and Chris has it at a 7 out of 10. So we'll see how that turns out. But At this point, it's time to go back to the present, back to when we've had a chance to play this game, and let's talk about how it goes.
Yeehaw! There was no sound to this game.
No, there was no sound. That music means we're back to the present, back to when we've had a chance to replay the game again. So, Chris, let's talk about actually playing the Oregon Trail.
The concept is pretty simple. You start in Independence, Missouri, and you need to make your way to
Willamette.
Willamette
Valley.
You need to make your way to Willamette Valley in Oregon.
It's not. It's Willamette.
I. You learned this when we were in Oregon.
I know they. I forgot we learned this in Oregon 2 months ago. It's Willamette. I don't care. Willamette sounds stupid.
I got this pointed out when I was at bar trivia the other night because someone was from that area. So.
Yeah, it is. I know. We went to Oregon and they literally told me that, and I was like, "It's not Willamette." Yes, that is the journey. Independence to, I'm not saying it, to Oregon.
So, to do that, you are in a oxen-drawn wagon. So, when you start in Independence, you can pick a different job, you can buy your supplies, and then you set off. So the different jobs, I played a mix of...
We're mostly talking about the, like, 1995 version, not the very original version.
Correct, yeah. So
just throwing it out there.
I played that one, and then I played the CD version, the CD-ROM version, which added a couple things here and there, a couple more jobs.
Yeah, I played the 95 version, and then I actually went back and played the original 74 version that's available online.
Oh, nice.
Because I had to. But anyway, we are focusing mostly today on the 95 version. Sorry, we should have said that earlier.
You got the different jobs. What they do is you'll start with more or less money, but then you'll get like a score multiplier at the end based on the job. So like if you were a doctor, sometimes it would have perks as well, I should say.
Yes.
So if you were a doctor, you've got a better chance of healing sick people. If you're a carpenter or a blacksmith, you've got a better chance of repairing parts of the wagon. If you're a teacher, you get no money and no bonuses.
Ha!
You start with like $400 instead of $2,000 or something like
that.
But your score multiplier is huge.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're going for high score, I mostly stuck with the jobs that would actually help me and had more money because.
Yes. So it's like farmer.
Who wants
a
challenge?
Is better rationed or something like that. The easy one, the cheat one, is the banker because you get way more money at the start, and so you could just buy supplies for everything you need.
Yeah. And so supplies would include things like food, spare parts, bullets to go hunting, clothes.
Which I didn't understand
honestly,
why you needed.
Yeah, you trade them at some point.
It's more like, trading for clothes as far as I can tell.
Maybe if you didn't have clothes, then you would get frostbite late game or something like that. I never actually ran into that.
Ooh, true. Maybe if you went too far into the winter, you needed clothing.
Yeah. And that's a good reminder of something else that you could choose is when in the year you left. So it's like if you left in March, there would be less grass because it was early in the year for the oxen.
Yeah.
Oxen was another thing you could buy. If you left later in the year, you could get caught in the snow and possibly delayed once you got into the mountains.
And possibly Donner Party. I don't
there
think they
no,
built that into the game.
There's no party like a Donner Party.
In the very, very original game, that I think the 71 version of the game, you could get tomahawked randomly.
Doi.
And luckily, when they started spreading that out like to the game, like in the original 71 version, the teacher showed other teachers before they released it to the students. And some of the other teachers pointed out that that might be insensitive. And so they changed it.
Yeah.
They change it to knifed.
Jesus.
So fun. But yeah, there's the hunting mechanic. So as you're going along, you can stop. If you're running out of food, you can stop and hunt.
Mm-hmm.
could buy more supplies if you reached forts, because there were landmarks that were just pictures, and they're like, it's a landmark.
Yeah, it would give you some history on said landmark in some of the games. And in the CD version, it would play a little ditty that was, which I thought was really cool, because one of them was The Wayfaring Stranger, which I actually really liked that song after it popped up in 1917, the movie.
Oh, okay.
And so, like, I was like, oh, yeah, it's a folk song that was written in, like, the 1800s, and then it popped up. I was like, oh, I actually know that song.
Right. And that's where the education part comes in, that they try to add, like, here's at this, like, this is this fort, and here's some history facts, or here's this landmark and history fact, and you could talk to NPCs at those areas, and they'd give little tidbits of, like, what's going on in the area.
And that's how they kind of broke it up into those different segments.
Yeah.
So when you're traveling between these outposts and landmarks and stuff like that, they make different terrain types, and especially you see that when you're hunting.
Yeah.
You know, you could, you know, hit different weather based on the day. There's different.
That's where the RNG, it's in between the sites that the RNG really comes into play, because that's why you'll just be traveling down the road and they're like, so-and-so has broken an arm. And you're like, oh, God.
Yeah, it's like, so you're less efficient and they're sick, and you could rest if you want to help, or if you're playing the version that I played, it was like a browser version. Mm-hmm. The keyboard gets disconnected, so I couldn't type in the number of days that I wanted to rest. So, sorry, that party didn't go well, because I just...
Or you could play my version of, well, you're sick, deal with it, we're going on. Might have been why most of my parties only ended up with two people at the end.
I had the one run I did with a doctor, I had the number of instant deaths that I had. I was like, but I'm a doctor!
I had a couple where... Well, and now we're getting the actual gameplay. So something would pop up. Yeah. So as you're going down the screen, you'd just have little blurbs that would pop up. And it would be like, so-and-so has dysentery, which is the joke that everyone always talks about. Dysentery is the one that everyone remembers. There are a lot of different diseases that you could get in this game. It wasn't just dysentery. I mean, there were basic ones like, so-and-so has a fever. Like, okay. But there were like, I forget some of the other ones. There were a lot of different ways you could... Cholera kept popping up. I kept getting cholera.
Typhoid fever, typhoid. Just a regular fever.
Like, it was, I was like, there's
broken
a lot of,
limbs, broken snake limbs, bites.
I forgot about the snake bites. So there were a lot of different things. But other things could happen, like, oh, you got set upon by raiders, and so you get stuff stolen from you.
Mm-hmm.
That happened randomly.
You get lost.
You could get lost, or bad weather can stop you, so it takes extra days. You could also, this is where you deal with your wheel broke, and so that's where you could either try to repair it, and if you don't repair it, you better hope you have a spare, or you can't keep going. So it was really interesting. That's where most of the stuff happened, was in between the set stopping points, basically.
Mm-hmm. And there was the fording the river.
Yes.
You would come upon rivers, and you could either ford the river, and it would say, it's like, oh, it's this wide and this deep.
Yeah.
What do you want to do? Do you want to ford the river? Do you want to try to float your boat across it? Do you want to wait
or
for
you
a ferry?
Find a ferry? Yeah.
Yeah. Which would cost you money and time. And, you know, if you, let's say it's too deep, if it was more than like 2.5-3 feet deep, I think there was a pretty good chance of flooding. And it's like, you could either lose supplies or someone could drown.
Yeah.
If you float, it could fall over, which I feel like there was in the CD version. They actually gave you the weight of the wagon, which I feel like went into that a lot. Yeah. The CD version added a bunch of little stuff here and there, like that it would give you a log that would say, like, if you got lost, it would actually say, like, the number of days that you got lost, as opposed to just, like, having to figure it out based on, you know, the days.
Yeah.
So, and the map was nicer. They did have a map, so you could, like, chart your progress. So that was kind
of
cool.
And every once in a while, there were two different choices of which direction you can go, so you could look at the map and make those choices. Like, I think near the end, there was one where you could either go a faster route, but you only hit a landmark, so there's no supplies that you can gather, or a slower route because you hit a fort. And then you go. So, like, if you need supplies, you can go up and hit the fort, but that's more time that you're using.
Right. And again, the hunting game was big. I remember that was one of my favorite things as a kid. So there was the original version that we played was just like you use the number pad to move around, and it was kind of like a top down. And yeah, I think we called this in the Rose, and then the CD version was kind of like a Buck Hunter
first person shooter type. Almost, right?
Yeah. So, and that the newer version also introduced like spoilage, because I don't think that was in the
I don't remember that the being first in the one original that we played.
Yeah, so like the food that you would buy in forts and stuff was non-perishable. And then the stuff that you would buy, and it broke it up into perishable and non-perishable food. So it's like,
interesting.
You could go hunting to your soul's content, but the food would only last X number of days before it's spoiled, and you'd have to go hunting again.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't think that was in the 92 version we were originally playing. In the very original game, the 1974 one that I played, so hunting was, there was a lot more incidents where I had to shoot, because it was hunting. Mm-hmm. You had to, like, it was how quickly you hit bang, was typed bang would be like how accurate it were, and it would literally be like, you got it through the neck. I was like, oh, aggressive. But like, it was things like, bandits are upon you, do you fight back, or like I'm like, oh, bang, and like, you went slow, they took some of your stuff, like And so the other thing about the original game, that there were no jobs in the very original game, it was just kind of more standard, because it makes sense, it was very basic. I had to laugh because they're like, how much of supplies do you want to buy, and like I tried to put in numbers because like I don't know, and they're like, I put in a bunch of numbers like, how much you want to spend on each of these items, I put these numbers in, they're like, you don't have that much money, this is how much money you have. I'm like, why didn't you tell me that in the first place? I had to redo it. They did let me redo it, but I was like, I had no idea. I definitely was someone who liked to play loaded on food as much as I could. I liked having, not worrying about hunting until later in the game. So that I could not stress about it early game.
And like early in the game is not the game, as in, you know, the game that you're hunting. Yeah. There's not as much. It's only like squirrels and rabbits and maybe a deer. And then you get into the woods and there's bears and ox,
but you'd shoot a bear,
buffalo,
and then be like,
sorry,
it'd be like 2,000 pounds, but you only get to keep like 100.
Yeah,
it's like, but American, I can make
bison,
multiple trips.
One.
I can make multiple trips.
I know. Well, so it's interesting. Again, at least in the CD version, if you started losing party members, you could carry less back. So, like by default, if you got a full party, at least in that game, you could carry back like 200 pounds of food. And it's like, oh, if you're down to two people, you can only carry back like 100 pounds of food or something like that.
I mean, that makes sense. You also need less food.
Yeah.
You can also choose how much.
Yes.
And this is from one of the early game mechanics, like from the original 74 game, was you could choose how well you're feeding your party, basically. So if you know that you're going to have a lot less food, you can ration it and say, okay, I'm switching. Instead of being full, I want them to be moderate. Instead of moderate, I want to be like barely living, basically. Like, you could choose that too. Again, a big part of the game was trying to monitor your supplies and balance the supplies you had, because that's the other way that in the mid, like the 92 game, that the jobs matter. And I'm sure in the CD as well, was, yes, you got less money as a carpenter, but you didn't maybe have to buy as many spare parts, because the likelihood you could repair the part was way higher because you had the job bonus. So, I like those balances that they add, that it's more than just a luck game, even though there is random generation still a huge part. Like, you can actually try to factor things into how you're approaching it.
Yeah.
Which I think is really interesting.
It was a neat balance. It was, again, I didn't do a ton of different jobs, because at some point it's like, I should have tried to run with like, you start with no money and get a huge bonus and see what you could do, but
considering I started with a lot of money and like all the supplies, and I still killed off my whole party. I that was one thing I know you did on stream, of like naming people. So you had really funny moments of like the names of characters when they die or something like that. Mm-hmm. But like, that was something I do remember doing as a kid and having fun naming the characters. And so you try to do silly names that make you laugh. But like, when I did this playthrough, I did the Final Fantasy VII characters who are currently available in the Rebirth game, because like, at least when I was playing. And so that was five people. And so I had Cloud, Tifa, Aerith, Barret, and Red 13. Oh, I forgot Yuffie. So I did forget Yuffie. I didn't add Yuffie to my party, but
everyone forgets about Yuffie.
I know. Poor Yuffie. But in the game, it'd be funny as I'm playing. I'm like, oh no, Barrett broke a leg. No. It makes you care a little bit more, or not. It makes you laugh. You know, it depends.
Well, and the CD version also had like a little thing would pop up with like a picture. It's just mm-hmm. like, so-and-so broke their leg. It's like someone lying on the ground holding their leg. Or like, the one that I always laughed at was like, what if your oxen is sick? And it's just like an oxen lying down on the ground and someone in the background walking towards the ox with a gun. It's just like, oh, God.
Well, yeah, I do know in later games, it was like, if your oxen died, you could use them as food. Which is cold. But it was things like, in the very early game, in like the 70 game, if someone died, you can ask for last rites. And if they want a gravestone or not.
Oh, nice.
It's dark. But I mean that happened. People died on the trail.
Part of the board game version is when someone dies, you're supposed to take like the little whiteboard that has a bunch of tombstones and write them a tombstone and epitaph.
I love it. In the 92 game, or maybe even the CD-ROM game, when someone died, you can create a gravestone for where they died and you can write the epitaph. And so teachers said, this is great, because then in later games, it was saved to the disc itself.
This is mech.
Oh, the original mech version.
Yeah.
So very back in the day, basically, yes. You could save it to the game itself. And basically, so someone could come across that later that said, so-and-so died here. Except, you know, kids are kids. And so they would put inappropriate things like, Jenny is dumb. And the teachers then had to reach out and be like, this is cool, but can we have a way that teachers can go in and delete certain ones? Because kids are inappropriate.
Yep, that tracks.
So, there you go. I mean, that's fun little nuances that they added in, which is a lot of fun. And I think that comes to, you know, our actual gameplay, as you could hear. I had way more fun with this than I thought I was going to. I'm not even going to lie.
Yeah, me too. Like, sometimes I would just have it up in the browser in, like, the background. And, like, yeah. I would just click over to it when something exciting happened. So, like, or I wanted to hunt or something like that. So it was like, it was a fun little, I mean, it was almost like an idle game, right? Like, it was just kind of going in the background. But yeah, I definitely had way more fun than I thought I was going to.
Yeah. It was one of those things of like, A, of course, nostalgia is a big part of it. But it was just like, it's so silly. And there'd be moments of like, RNG definitely obviously took a huge part of it. Because I remember the first run I did. I got to like the first two or three like landmarks and nothing had gone wrong with my party. And I was like, this is great. And then the second time I played, like 2 minutes in, half my party was dying of dysentery. I'm like, why?
Yeah.
And it just was, that's the reminder of like the RNG of like, I got really good luck the first time and really bad luck the second time. It's just nothing to do.
The first time I replayed it for the podcast, and I think this was on stream, I got all the way to the end with a full party, and I was just like, I should just stop. Yeah. It's all downhill from here.
Like, I didn't do that many runs. I think I ended up doing like five or six runs in the 90s version. I don't think I finished the run in the 74 version because I was just like, this is so silly. But I don't think I managed to keep a whole party alive ever. But it's because I didn't rest. I knew I could rest. I chose not to.
That is so on brand.
But there were a couple frustrating things because it'd be things like, there's low on water. There's low water. Okay, what do I do about that? Nothing. You just have to keep going.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. That was a total RNG. Well, yep. Good luck.
Because you can't rest or change your route. You just have to just keep going.
Yeah. Yep.
So I at one point was thinking of, I was like, maybe I'll rest. And I was like, no, I can't rest here. There's no water. So I'll kill everyone else if I rest here. So on we go.
Yep.
But yeah, it was much more fun than I expected. There's not a lot to talk about with this game at the end of the day. I mean, there's a lot of versions of it. There's like sequels and stuff. There's spin-offs where they now have like the Amazon Trail and like different types of trails with different environments and stuff. All good fun. All fun edutainment. Again, there's a lot of versions that are available for free online, like through the actual, like officially free, like not, this is not us saying like be illegal, but like officially free versions of it online. It's a lot of fun. It's very silly. Go and play it for like 15-20 minutes. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, or again, just throw it in the background while you're doing other stuff. Maybe pay attention to it. Like the CD version had a nice GUI for that, where you could track a bunch of stuff at the same time. The 94, 95 version, whatever, also had that, but you had to like specifically type a bunch of stuff to get there, so it was a little bit harder to do. Go find it, play it.
Go find it, play it. Overcross, what is your final score for Oregon Trail?
Honestly, I think it's going to be a 9 because it exists in its world for what it it did what it was supposed to do.
Yeah, it was a fun entertainment game.
You know going in that the RNG is going to be horrible.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, yeah, I'm probably being too fair or too nice to this game, but don't care. I had so much fun playing it again.
I'm just going to throw out there, you're giving it the same score that you gave Jak and Daxter, Donkey Kong Country, Star Fox 64.
Yep. No regrets.
But I mean, it's for our scores, and I think that's a big part. I think my final score for this is going to be an 8 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
Way higher than either of us predicted of the 6 to 7. But the reason I'm saying it is, when we score things, and I think we've made it pretty obvious at this point of the podcast, but if you're not familiar, we're not scoring on, is this a good game that's amazing? And it's on our enjoyment. How much did we enjoy playing this game? That's often how our scores are skewed.
We tried to do that in the beginning, and then we're just like, nah.
We're not game reviewers. That's not our job. This is the whole point of this is, how did we like playing this game? So games that other people might love that frustrate us, we're going to give lower scores. Games that we like that are silly and other people might be like, really? Be like, yeah, no, we're going to give a higher score. So yeah, 8 out of 10.
Yeah.
Yes, I know it's higher than I probably should, but it's still good fun.
Did it hold up? It held up pretty well.
I don't need the graphics. It's more fun this way. It's more fun.
I built a new computer, a gaming computer, and then the first game I installed was like Half-Life. It's like, well, I'm glad I'm using my $700 video card.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It was a great game. We had a ton of fun. Yeah, just doing what we want to do. So all that being said, play some old school games. Literally school games. They're good fun. Our next episode is going to be one close to my heart that Chris could probably give zero cares about, which is unusual for these because normally it's the other way around. What's our next game, Chris?
We are going to be playing Harvest Moon. I forget which one.
That's going to be the fun part. We're going to be playing a variety of Harvest Moons because we're putting them all into one episode because there's no reason to differentiate them. I'm sorry.
Yes. I like the idea of Harvest Moon.
Well, don't talk about it now.
Okay.
Save it for the episode.
You're the one that said I couldn't care about it.
No, it's you don't care about it.
That's fair.
Not you couldn't. It's that you don't.
That's true.
So thanks for listening, guys. Look forward to the next episode. Again, you can catch us on all of our social media, on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, which we don't really use anymore, Threads, or we're GWGW Show. You can find us on Twitch at GWGW Show. We stream on most Tuesdays for some co-op games for fun. We try to stream all these games there. I'll maybe play a Harvest Moon stream. It'll be very chill stream if we do, because Harvest Moon is a very chill game.
It is, yes. We will be streaming more games, and it's a good way to kind of, get a sneak peek about the next episode a lot of times.
Yep, absolutely. So thanks, everyone, for listening. We always say we can't do it without you, which is true. We do this because it's a lot of fun. Thank you to our producers who keep us in line and yell at us from the background and sometimes at very interesting points.
Yes.
I think it's time to wrap up because I don't want to get sick. It's time to ford the river. So say goodbye, Chris.
Goodbye, Chris.
Bye, everyone. I kept getting cholera.